Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name's Nigel Jones and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's podcast, where we're going to be exploring some recent developments with the NHS and with CQC on a couple of particular topics, and we're going to be doing that in the company of Tom Coates. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, Nigel.
I wonder if you could just introduce yourself for our listeners.
Yes, I'm the Managing Director of FTA Law. I'm a solicitor. My specialisms are buying and selling practices, business issues, commercial agreements, dealings with the NHS, CQC, that kind of thing.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. One of the questions that I wanted to put to you, Tom, was to do with the buying and selling of practices, particularly where there's an NHS contract involved, and the role that the CQC play in that process, because I believe there's been some changes. Could you elaborate on that for us?
Yes. The NHS contracts, the way that they're worded, if you have a GDS contract, you are able to transfer that between individuals, and the process we've historically used has been, we refer to it as the partnership route, and the reason for that is the contract allows you to add a party onto your contract as a partner, purely through the service of notice on the NHS, and that's not something which the NHS is entitled to refuse consent for. It's a legal right that you can add a partner on, and it's also a legal right that you can retire a partner. So whilst NHS contracts are stated to be non-transferable, they are, because you can add a buyer on as a partner and you can retire the seller as being a partner, and the contract ends up in the name of the prospective purchaser. And that's the way NHS practices have always been bought and sold since the current regulations came into force. A complicating factor with that arose when CQC came in, because NHS first said at that point, well, we're now no longer going to allow you to add and remove partners unless we have seen that the CQC registration at the practice reflects the partnership, as it were, and then once the seller has retired, it's changed back to an individual CQC registration. So we had to go through, and still do have to go through, this little bit of a charade in terms of addressing the CQC purely to satisfy the NHS so that they can add a partner on, then we can retire them, and then change the CQC back. However, the lawyers got their heads around that, and that's the process we've been using for the last few years since CQC came in. Very, very recently, within the last month or so, CQC appear to have had a change of policy, and they are now being slightly more obstructive, shall we say. We had one particular client who was going through that process, and at the interview she had with her CQC assessor, was told that if this CQC partnership was being put in place to facilitate a practice sale or purchase, then the CQC would deem that to be what they call a bridging partnership, and in their view that is a waste of taxpayers' money, and they would refuse to register it. The upshot of that, of course, is that that party would then no longer be able to satisfy the NHS's requirements, and the practice couldn't be bought or sold.
So is it quite as black and white as that? Then they haven't gone to the point of actually stopping practice sales?
It's an attempt, I would say. I mean, on the face of it, they say it's an attempt to save their labour and resources from having to put in these short-term partnerships purely to facilitate the sale or purchase of a practice, and I suppose that's understandable. And it does emanate from NHS England's position. If NHS England didn't insist that the CQC had to say one thing, nobody would do it. There would just have to be one CQC registration in place. As always, when there's a change, the lawyers start scratching their heads a little bit and try to pick their way through it. And it does appear that it's not had the effect of frustrating the sale of, but it has had the effect of frustrating sales and purchases of practices, but it hasn't stopped them. We have found that there is a way to phrase the initial approach to the CQC in such a way that they don't block it. We have a matter on at the moment for a client who she's going through that exact process, and the CQC are adamant that they will not register the CQC partnership. And the argument we have used is, well, if you're happy for us to go to NHS England and say that CQC are absolutely 100% comfortable that this registration is not required, then we'll go and do that. And the approach that the CQC then took was they took a slight backward step from that. If we said, well, are you prepared to put your head on the line about that? And the argument we used was, well, actually, if that partnership, which is a legal entity for a short period of time, doesn't have a valid CQC registration, well, patients treated by that entity will have no rights of legal recourse. And we've seen that that argument does seem to hold some water with them. So it's not stopped practice sales and purchases, but it's made it so that you have to have this dialogue with them, which does slow the process down.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, actually, is the impact a time issue? It sounds like you can solve it with some appropriate wording and some appropriate approaches.
I think that's it. If the approach is made and phrased in the correct way, you can get through that process. The CQC are, as part of their deliberations with this, as a matter of course, their assessors will now ask to see far more paperwork to evidence the short-term partnership arrangement. So they'll ask to see a partnership agreement, a properly drafted legal partnership agreement. They'll dig deep into the property requirements at the practice. You know, if you're occupying under a lease, well, I need to see a lease in the partnership's name. And whilst the lawyers can put all this paperwork in place, it's purely for the purposes of satisfying the CQC. So it slows things down. It increases the volume of paperwork that that buyers will have to do in order to buy a practice. And unfortunately, it does lead to increased cost as a result.
And talk me through again the justification or the rationale you think the CQC are employing there.
I think there's two different strands to it. I think the NHS took the approach two or three years ago, more I think it was, that they insisted on seeing a CQC registration that matched the names on the NHS contract at all times. A cynical view would be that that was a pure attempt to frustrate the sale and purchase of NHS dental practices, because it's not universally agreed upon that people should buy and sell NHS practices. It's not legal to buy and sell NHS goodwill in a doctor's practice, for example. It is actually illegal to do that. Whereas the way the NHS dental contracts are drafted, it is legal to do it for the reasons that we've just discussed. There is perfectly legal means within the contracts in order to do it. And nobody questions the fact that it's a legal thing to do. But ethically, I think, there are certain voices who say you shouldn't profit from the sale or purchase of NHS goodwill. And my thoughts are that the NHS took that approach, that we don't think people should be buying and selling practices, and that's why they took their initial that initial standpoint. CQC, I don't think, are taking the approach that we don't think ethically people should be buying and selling dental practices. I think CQC are taking the approach, as they explained it to our client, that they're being forced to put in place so many of these short-term partnerships purely to facilitate a sale. It's proving burdensome on their time and resources, and in their view, it's a waste of taxpayers' money. And I suppose you can actually see where they're coming from in that regard, because it must be frustrating to receive a partnership application 1 month, which their assessor goes through, assesses everything, puts the time and effort into doing that, and then 2 months later the seller retires and then they have to change it back to an individual registration. It's a bit of a charade. But it does come from the NHS's position, is how we first got to this point.
See, I think that's really interesting in terms of trying to imagine how this might unfold going forward, because the fact that the lawyers have come up with a solution doesn't solve the CQC's workload issues.
It doesn't. And one of the courses of action that we have in mind, and it's something which I haven't, but I'm sure some of my other colleagues may have had mind to doing it, is to reverse it and go back to the NHS and say, look, the CQC themselves are saying this is an unnecessary charade that we're having to go through, and it's wasting taxpayers' money. And if NHS could change their position and rely on CQC's assurance that, look, as long as there is one CQC registration in place at this practice, we're happy. We're not that bothered whose name it's in. As long as this practice has been properly assessed and everything's above board, We don't need to start messing about with it. If the NHS will rely on that, then it could actually have a really beneficial effect on the sale and purchase of practices, because if there's no longer the obligation to address the CQC, then yeah, that will have a great effect on the timescales for buying and selling practices.
Yeah, well, that sounds like it would be a real help, actually, because how long does the process take now?
The shortest time it can be done is 4 months, because you're looking at 8 to 12 weeks for your CQC registration and then a further 28 days notice to the NHS. So 4 months, we always say, is a minimum for buying or selling an NHS practice, but I have to be honest, the average tends to be 6 months. So if you can take the 8 to 12 week CQC process off that, it can halve the time of a practice sale.
It'd be very interesting to see whether they do allow that to happen, because you can see some advantages to that. But your point then about NHS goodwill ownership and profiting from NHS patients comes really into focus then, doesn't it? Because then they'd be sanctioning that.
Yes, absolutely. And whether they want to be seen to be doing that, I don't know. I think it's politically unfashionable for them to be seen to be making the process of buying and selling dental practices any easier. It's no secret it happens. There's a large industry around it, and it's a very buoyant industry. The NHS know it happens, but I just don't think they want to be seen to be condoning it. But yes, if they would do that, it could be something of a game changer.
Yeah. Well, very interesting, and we'll watch that space with interest, I think. So the second one that I wanted to ask you about, which I suspect is probably a shorter issue to deal with, is in respect to changes to the 24-hour retirement rules.
Yes, some of the listeners may be aware that if you have an NHS contract and it's your intention to take to start to claim your NHS pension, there's a process that you will have to go through, and basically that process involves retiring from the NHS. Now, many people who want to start claiming their pension want to do so but don't want to stop working in the NHS. They perhaps have more than likely do have an NHS dental contract that they want to keep hold of. So what they've historically had to do is take what's called 24-hour retirement, which means you retire from the NHS for a brief period, 24 hours, and then you go back to work for the NHS. And that short period of retirement means that you can start to claim your pension. The downside to it has always been that if you have an NHS contract and you take retirement, technically that can trigger a retender of your contract. So you could theoretically lose your NHS contract at that point. It's very much a worst case scenario, but nevertheless, that's what the regulations say. So in order to get around that, how dentists have traditionally dealt with it, how we've dealt with it on behalf of our clients, is you add another party onto the NHS contract. Because if a party retires from an NHS contract and there's somebody else remaining on it, it doesn't trigger a retender, it just continues in the name of the person. So if you've got another person on there, it's not a problem, but if you're a sole trader, it is. So what we do is we add someone onto the contract just for the purposes of the seller to take in a 24-hour retirement, and then we retire them back off it, it goes back into the name of the seller, and hey presto, they've kept their contract and they can start claiming their pension. The difficulty is, going back to what we were talking about when we were talking about the CQC and the NHS, is that process negated a huge number of changes in respect of the CQC again, because once again we have to make sure that the CQC reflects the names on the NHS contract. So in that short-term partnership, we have to address the CQC first. Now, the NHS, in their recent guidance published this year, have actually acknowledged for the first time that if somebody is going through this process purely for the purposes of taking 24-hour retirement and starting to claim their NHS pension, they will no longer require them to mess about with all the CQC, basically, and put the short-term partnership in place and all the rest of it. So it makes that process somewhat more straightforward and shorter. And I suppose the logical extension of that is, going back to the bit we were talking about at the beginning, is it does open the door for a slightly less rigid approach to the CQC registration on the part of the NHS.
Fascinating. So, well, it sounds like actually some potentially good news. At the moment, maybe slightly hidden in a complication that the CQC have introduced across the board, both in terms of buying and selling. But then there's things like the 24-hour retirement rule easing up. Actually, that sounds like there's grounds for optimism.
Absolutely, yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time, Tom. Really appreciated talking to you today.
Pleasure.